Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the World According to Velvet. This is live from Rocks and Things. We're reporting here live from planet Earth, smack dab in the middle of the City of Light. Hi there. Shalaha, the place where healers come to heal their wounds so they can heal others. So we're here today. It's Friday morning. It's a beautiful, then glorious day here. I am trying to figure out a way. Maybe I'll go wash the windows so I can get outside. But it's a gorgeous day. So just kind of a little update as to what I understand is happening. Tomorrow is the new moon, and we'll talk about that in a sec. So there's some really fun things happening in April and May, and I'm just going to plant some seeds for future things so you can be aware of. It's the 23rd. So isn't this coming? No, it's next, a couple weeks from now. City Carr, our friend Renee, is going to do an intro to Kundalini Yoga and Gong Meditation at Imagine Health in Columbia Falls from 7 to 9 p.m. Laurel is going to do the Crystal Medicine Wheel here at the Gathering Space. That's Friday the 24th at 6:30. Paula Greenstein is going to be doing a dream workshop here on two Tuesdays, the April 21st and April 28th, 7 to 9 p.m. She's going to help give you some ideas on how to interpret your own dreams. Then in May, I'm looking at my board here. In May, Renee is bringing Kartik Puderk, Subak Ruda here to do a Sunia workshop, a weekend workshop for deep listening. I would love to go, but I'm going to be in Ireland at the time. Anyway, that's just some of the stuff that's happening here at the Gathering Space. I'm doing my static body posture this weekend to celebrate the new moon. We've got some yoga going on. There's a schedule changing because of this change of seasons. It's not set yet, but I think Renee is going to still be teaching Tuesdays at 9 a.m., Wednesdays at 5:30 p.m. I'm going to drop my Wednesday class and just do my Friday classes, 4 a.m. sadhana and 7 a.m. kundalini, and then as spring progresses, I might add a 9 a.m. or Thursday evening. So I'll figure that out when I come back from Ireland. Anyway, so just so you know, that's what some of the cool stuff that's happening here. Plus, we're doing the crystal bowl meditations Wednesdays at 8 p.m. after a City Carr yoga class. So anyway, I've just been kind of watching and witnessing what's happening for myself and others. There feels like since last week, last Wednesday, it felt like there was a big download of energy. It had to do with Uranus conjuncting the sun. And to me, it felt like a big download of our soul came in and we are doing what we can to hold it. Some of us are conscious of it and are doing our spiritual practices or being physical. I think being physical helps. The other thing that is happening is we're in the midst of a solar storm. The solar winds are blowing at 639 kilometers per second. That's just enough to stir us up. And as we celebrate and honor the new moon tomorrow in the morning, I'm looking at different calendars, and I don't know exactly what time it is. It's just tomorrow morning, because I was on the astrology.com, and the time that the wee moon calendar said is the new moon wasn't the new moon, so I haven't quite figured it out. Anyway, it's still going to be the potential for a really powerful day. Aries moon can be like emotionally reactive. Boom, you feel something, you let it move through. You know, you could do some damage because if you react to the emotion, or you have the potential to capture explosive energy tomorrow and utilize it to make changes in your life, whether for your own personal life or for the life of the planet or your family or your community. So be aware, not only are we being stirred up by these solar winds, we have this moon, the moon of the warrior, the moon of aggression and passion and will. It's a powerful, it's the red man moon, because Mars, they call the red man, and I think he may even be part human and have some really human capacities and potentials that we can all tap into tomorrow. Now, if you want to join me for my posture class at 9 a.m. tomorrow, I'll tell you more. Anyway, the other thing when I was looking at the astrology for this chart, and remember, I'm not an astrologer. I just have a passion for it. I was looking at the chart, and besides the new moon in Aries, which the sun and the moon are both in Aries, just at like 28 degrees, almost ready to jump into Taurus. So things are going to calm down within the next couple days, but these next couple days might be intense. The other thing that's going on is a big square, all right? And because I work with the goddess asteroid, I'm really fascinated with the archetypal goddess energies. I include the goddess energies in the charts that I look at, and there's some big things happening in the goddess world. And so historically, the goddess played a really powerful role archetypally, and then with the advent of the patriarchy and the suppression of the feminine, a lot of these goddesses got a bad rap. And what I think is happening is a lot of these goddesses are being redeemed right now, and the potential to utilize their energy is magnifying. So in looking at the chart, the square, so in astrology, when you have a square, you have two planetary oppositions and four planets that are at 90 degrees to each other. So what it creates is a big red square in the chart, and it's tension. But it's some of the most potential for growth when these charts or when these planetary alignments impact your chart personally. So in this square, there is Neptune at 9 degrees Pisces, opposing Iris at 8 degrees Virgo. The other corners are Venus and Hathor at 8 degrees Gemini, opposing Saturn retrograde, almost 4 degrees Sagittarius. So what does that mean, you say? Well, just again, I'm not an astrologer. I'm a mythologist. Theoretical mythologist, that's my new word. Neptune in Pisces is all about the dreamer, okay? And when we have had some sort of wounding that disconnects us from our imagination or gives us a tenuous hold on reality, we can kind of flip into the shadow of Neptune in Pisces, which is the delusional drug addict, alcoholic, okay? So we have the potential with Neptune and Pisces to be totally connected to creation, to all of creation, all levels of creation, as well as the creator source energy, okay? Or with woundings or shadows, we can deny or discount our connection to source and then have a tenuous grip on reality. So opposing Neptune in Pisces is Iris in Virgo. And so as I understand the mythology of Iris, she's very similar to Mercury. And in fact, she may be his feminine aspect. You know, who knows how those god-goddess things work. But anyway, Iris is the messenger of the gods to humans. And Iris brings information to humans and travels along the rainbow. And I don't know if you know anything about me, you know that I'm obsessed with the rainbow. So to find out about this rainbow goddess has been really empowering to me. So what I understand with Iris is that she connects to us through what I consider our rainbow body of light. And traditions, the Christian tradition, I think you see pictures of Christ after he's, you know, come out of the tomb with his rainbow body. And we also see pictures of Buddha sitting in a rainbow circle. I think what that means is that their rainbow bodies of light are activated. Okay, so when we are fully functioning with what I consider our electrical system, which includes our chakra system, our meridian system, and our nervous system, we have the potential to have a fully activated rainbow body of light. So those two are opposing each other, and because Iris is in Virgo, I think it's really about physically manifesting that rainbow body of light without having to die. I don't think we have to die to activate our rainbow body of light, okay? And I'm going to get into why I think that in a minute, okay? Just because nobody's here, so I might as well just talk. So anyway, the other opposition is Hathor and Venus in Gemini, okay? So Hathor is very much like Venus. So Venus is the goddess of love, and most people know about Venus, okay? She's the goddess of love, but according to the Greek and Roman mythologies, she was a little bit of a, she was a playa. Okay, and I really think she is maturing into a more, balanced and whole feminine mother, lover, goddess, more like how I perceive Hathor. And Egyptian mythology, Hathor is the goddess of love as well. The difference between Venus and Hathor is that Hathor actually started as a lion-headed goddess of vengeance, okay? She is one of the Eyes of Ra that was sent to the planet to restore balance after some off-planet dudes were siphoning all the resources off the planet. And she came to Earth, and she was so good at getting rid of the bad guys, yet she and her fellow Eyes of Ra, they kind of killed humans in the process. And Ra said, you know, these humans, I know they're kind of a pain, but we need them. They serve some part of the divine plan, so we can't let these Eyes of Ra destroy humans. So he sends his messenger, which is Mercury. He doesn't travel on Rainbow Bridge. He's got feathers on his feet. And he's got that helmet, too, with feathers on it. Anyway, he comes down. He's the only god that can travel through the three realms. He comes to Earth, and he sees these goddesses just like with bloodlust in their eyes. And he combines pomegranate juice and beer, and they cool down into these earth goddesses. Thus, we have Hathor. So Hathor and Venus conjunct at 8 degrees in Gemini kind of tells me that with this energy, the feminine can kill you and or love you depending on her mood, okay, or her mindset, because Gemini is about the mind, and it's also about the twins. So what if on some level Venus and Hathor are twins? There is some potential for healing that split within us of, you know, that song, I'm a bitch, I'm a lover, I'm a whore, I'm a mother, I'm a sinner, I'm a saint. Maybe Hathor and Venus and Gemini is going to find peace in the paradox of those two expressions of the feminine. Well, that energy is opposing Saturn at about 4 degrees Sagittarius, okay? So Saturn in Sagittarius is tied to, well, karma. It's also tied to structures that are Sagittarian, okay? And so Sagittarian structures can be very dogmatic structures. They can be this whole notion of these systems that see things as black or white. They see things as it's my way or the highway. That's kind of what I think of as Sag is out of balance. The imbalanced Sagittarian energy sees what the rest of us can't see, okay? It's the half man, half horse. It's got a bow. The bow is stretched back. The arm is stretched back, ready to shoot the arrow towards what the rest of us can't see. So Sagittarians, when they're balanced, can see what the rest of us can't see in a different way than Aquarians. They're not so much visionary. They're more action-oriented. They're going to go. They're moving towards what we can't see, what the rest of us can't see. They're also known for being truth-tellers. So Sagittarians have a reputation for being blunt. And a lot of people don't like bluntness because, you know, they don't want to hear the truth. And so the Saturn in Sagittarius is also about, calling bull blank, blank, blank on the structures that aren't being honest and aren't being truthful. And we're seeing that. The other thing with Saturn in Sagittarius is, from a Chinese medicine perspective, it rules the pericardium. And the pericardium is one of the heart protectors. And we have a physical pericardium, and it keeps the heart, it allows the heart to keep its rhythm. And energetically, what it does is I see it as a geometry that spins around the heart. And when the pericardium is functioning properly, it protects the heart. It spins around and deflects anything that would wound the heart. And so I think on a level that we haven't seen in a long time, we have the potential to heal our pericardiums. And our pericardiums are wounded through trauma, and it can be sexual trauma. Sexual trauma really is wounding to the pericardium. We also have the potential to heal past betrayals, okay? And usually what I'm finding with people who have pericardium issues, most often they have perceived the betrayal to have happened to them, which they did, but usually they betrayed themselves first. And that original betrayal disconnected them with the truth in their heart. So we have this great potential right now to heal our minds through the Gemini, Hathor and Venus in Gemini. Healing our minds will heal our hearts, okay? By healing our minds, we connect back into our heart. Maybe that's a better way to say it. And then the Sag will restore our pericardium so our hearts can be open. We can be open to what is coming. We also can connect to the truth in our hearts and what we know is true. So many people out there are really gullible. I can't deny that I haven't been gullible most of my life. But I had some major pericardium trauma as a child, and I had no discernment about what was true. I believed, we talk about this in the store, I believed everything everybody told me, and if it was in print, I thought it must be true. So talk about having to wake up and smell the roses and, you know, get out of my delusion. So by restoring the pericardium, we will have a greater sense of truth, okay? So the other thing about this whole thing is this chart for tomorrow is there is a trine between Neptune, the mystic and the dreamer, and Hygieia. And Hygieia, Hygieia is the root word for hygiene. We know all about that. There's spiritual hygiene. There's physical hygiene. It means health, you know, we think of it as cleanliness, but it's more about health. Well, what I was reading about Hygieia is that she is one of, oh, I'm not going to say this right, Asclepius's, and I know I didn't say that right, a god, he's the god of healing. She is one of his daughters. And she is somebody who brings healing to us through the dream time. And in times where she was honored and worshipped, people would actually go to the temple of Hygieia, and they would dream. And it was through their dreams in the temple of Hygieia that they would receive healing. And so what I'm noticing big time is dreams are big for people. You know, we're having a dream workshop. Paula's going to teach a dream workshop because I've been, a lot of people are going, I had this dream. What do you think it means? And people's dreams are intense. And I get the sense that the opportunity with Neptune trine Hygieia is that if we can heal our pericardium, okay, and heal the split in our within our feminine, the good witch, bad witch dilemma, and or if mom ain't happy, ain't nobody happy, or the what does that say about a woman scorned? The wrath, something about the wrath and a woman scorned. You know, don't mess with a woman because she won't get mad, she'll get even. Anyway, that we have an opportunity to take that power and that energy of the feminine that has, well, been betrayed, and we can use it to restore balance. But we have to do it first within. And we have the opportunity to use our dreams and use the dream time to restore healing for ourselves and our planet. So the other interesting thing that is tied to this is I've noticed over the last couple weeks that my dreams are changing. So I have a bunch of planets in Pisces, and Neptune went over my sun, and now it's going over my moon. And, you know, theoretically, it can make it hard for me to know what is real. And I've really felt, since I felt the day that Neptune moved into Pisces, I felt it. It was so bizarre. I felt that day that it first moved into Pisces, and I felt like I was living in a dream world, okay? And so I have, since that time, it's not that I've had a hard, a tenuous hold on reality, but my imagination has been so robust that sometimes I'm going, what's real? That's the question I ask, you know, what's real? And my dreams are becoming so vivid that I'm feeling like it's a little trippy for me sometimes. And it kind of brings to mind that notion of the Hopi prophecy that says there will be a time when we will not know whether we are dreaming or awake. And I feel like that a lot of the time. And I felt like that. I think Neptune has been in Pisces for almost 2 years now. And since it moved into Pisces, I have felt it. And now with Neptune on my moon, I'm really feeling it. There's another woman who's a Pisces, and she's in, I think, in her 80s. And she told me that just as natural for her is that when she shuts her eyes, she starts dreaming. And that's what I'm starting to notice. All I have to do is shut my eyes and focus at my third eye, and boom, I start getting these images. And, you know, I think they call some of it hypnagogic images. But I think it may be that, but what I also, you know, this is where it's going to sound weird, is that one of the things that I've also discovered in the last couple of weeks is my connection to dragon medicine and the whole notion of dragon lore and what dragons are about. So it was sort of, I'm writing my book about King Nail, and I've haven't been working so much on the story as I've been doing a backstory. I feel like I have to do this backstory. It's almost like I'm rewriting the history of the world, right? And so I have to have this backstory. And part of this backstory is about dragons and the role that dragons have played on this planet, and about what has happened, and why they are no longer a three-dimensional being. So as I understand dragons, the dragons are beings that work in the astral realm. And I don't think I stole this from anybody. I think I might have even made this up. But I think dragons go where angels fear to tread. Because dragons move in the astral realm, and guess what, guys? They travel on dragon lines, on rainbow serpent lines. And these rainbow serpents, or these dragon lines, which I discovered a couple of years ago, but I didn't really understand what I was perceiving, is these dragon lines, they're not like north-south longitudinal lines or latitudinal lines. They move like water. They move like a snake. And they move around. They kind of almost like meridians. They move along the surface of the earth, and then they can go into the air, and then they can go down into the earth. And dragons travel on these rainbow serpent lines. The other thing that I understand about dragons, one guy, he thinks dragons are the serpent lines, which are they're the rainbows, okay? This is really kind of interesting, just to give you something to think about. And so one of the things that I also came up with, again, I am a theoretical mythologist. So everything I get, I think, has symbolism and is archetypal and is a story. And so one of the things that I get or understand is, if you are a dragon rider, okay, you can only ride the dragon when your rainbow body of light is functioning, okay? And I don't know exactly how this is all tied to Iris, but when our rainbow bodies of light are activated and fully functioning, that means we are feeling all of our feelings. We are utilizing the energy being released by feeling the feelings. We are connected to our hearts. We are connected to all of creation. If you are a dragon rider, one of your roles of being a dragon rider is to travel along the dragon lines in the dream time and dream a new dream for our planet, as well as protect the earth. I don't exactly understand yet how dragon riders protect the earth, but if everything that is manifested in the physical has to be manifested in the dream time first, then the role of the dragon is really, the role of the dragon and the role of the dreamer is really important. And I think indigenous cultures talk a lot about dreamers and how there are people at this time dreaming a new dream for our planet. But what I get about the astral realm is that it's not all rainbows and unicorns. I think there are rainbows and unicorns. I think there are rainbows and unicorns there. However, I think that there are lower levels of the astral realm where there are creatures and places that, you know, are downright scary. And I think that we humans, I think that there are other animals and spirits that can help us when we're in the underworld, but I really think that this dragon energy can protect us and support us, perhaps, if you're a dreamer, if for some reason part of your destiny is to go into the astral realms and keep peace and protect humanity. I think that these dragons play a bigger role than we may have imagined, and all of this whole thing about killing dragons is maybe there's some, that's something to look at. Well, you know, my show's about over. There's somebody who just walked in. My friend Ina Albert came in, and I don't know, Ina, this is my radio show, The World According to Velvet. Is there anything you want to tell my listeners?
Well, I want to tell your listeners that Granny Greenie is back in town after a long vacation.
So good.
Granny Greenie is Granny Greenie Listen Louder, which is my latest book, and I came here to this wonderful rock shop to find a geode that I dreamed about. So I'm going to ask Velvet to guide me through this.
All right. Well, welcome back to town, Granny. All right. This is Velvet reporting live from planet Earth. Over and out. Have a great day. Enjoy the sun and see you on the flip side.